My nephew came up to me. He was 3 years old at the time, and he was staying with me during COVID. And he looked up at me, and I was doing the dishes, and he said, F I said, what? And he was like, and I was like, I don't understand you. He said it again. And I said, I think the word you're trying to say is truck. And he looked really confused. He's like, huh? He's like, I say it, truck. If the word is truck. And he's like, no, it's not.
Hello and welcome to Carry On Swearing. My name is Jake Parker. I'm your host today, and today's guest, or I'll let him explain himself.
Hello.
Who are you, sir?
My name is Jordan Jacobs, and I am an art director in film and television. I'm also the co-creator of a software application called Synergy, which helps creative teams to collaborate on breaking down scripts and share photos and drawings. So I'm really happy to be here. Thanks for asking me, Jake.
Hello, welcome. We've just to confirm to everyone, we have done this before. This is it's all it's not new. We have tried. It did not record, so just in case, anyone's asking questions, we are doing this all over again. Fantastic. So
So much disclosure, so much disclosure.
fantastic. So let me start off with asking, what does an art director do?
An art director works with a production designer who has the overall concept of the look of the project, whether it's a film or television show. And I work with the designer to flesh out the concept, then get it drawn, built, painted, decorated. Get all the graphics done, do the budget, negotiate with the producers, do the budget 4 more times, and then make sure it's all ready on the day that it's supposed to film all of the many, 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 many parts. And then I work with the rest of the production to make sure they know what we're doing, like the props team and the costumes team and the locations team. It's a ton of work.
It sounds like it is. I can imagine it is a lot of time. You said previous in our previous conversation that you look after a lot of people from the greens team to the construction team. What's that like? What is that a lot of responsibility?
Every project starts small, like it's massive. When I first started in this business, there's a lot of trying to understand, like there's this terror of a new thing starting and having to manage all of it and all of its many parts. But the biggest lesson I've learned is you just take one thing at a time, and you get it going. And that's the same way that a TV show or a film starts, no matter how big it is. It just starts with a simple meeting with two people, just going through what it is, what's the work, what is we're trying to do. And then it's just this additive process where you just keep chipping away at it and adding more and more people. So I work with a designer, and we talk about the concept, and I look at their research, and I do my own research, and we start drawing it up with a concept artist sometimes if we're lucky, and a set designer, and we just start drawing, and then we show those drawings to construction folks, and we say, well, how much would this cost? How long would it take you to do it? And same thing with the scenics. And then it just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So I am the studios don't call me a department head. The production designer is the on paper department head, but I am the de facto department head that has to run the construction coordinator, the scenic charge, the lead set designer, and all the many set designers. And I have to hire all these people. And I work directly with the set decorator and their team to collaborate. And the decorator hires their team, but then I have to manage all the dressers to get the sets dressed and make sure that they're meeting the deadlines and understand all of the drawings and all these many parts. And I work with the greens team to make sure that the either all of the fake greens outside the windows on the stage or the real greens will get to a location, and it won't be anything what we want it to be, and we have to make it look the way we want it to be, which is like take away all the homeowners' plantings that they love and keep them safe and add everything that we want, or make something that's summer look like winter, or something that's winter look like spring or summer, which sort of happens all the time. And I work directly with the prop master. I know that you are in props, and this show focuses a lot on props. And I work with them, and I'm there with the meetings with the director and them and their first meetings, and I just keep touch in touch with them. And sometimes they can just go and buy what they need or rent what they need, but quite often it has to be built. And so there are the prop makers, and I work with them. Like sometimes we have to do drawings for the prop makers of what it is we want. And only Murders in the Building, we had this birdcage in season two that we knew had to hide a very important element of the story. And it had to be revealed at a particular moment. We had like we knew it was coming, but we hadn't designed what that was. And so we had to get this thing out on the set and then kind of reverse engineer from there as the writers changed what it was that the prop had to do later on. And that wasn't easy either.
No, I can imagine. A question that gets asked me a lot is, should you go to university if you ever want to get into film and TV? Now, obviously, everyone's story changes to everyone who I ask. What's your opinion on that?
You know, it all depends on what you want to do. I don't think it's required for anyone to have schooling to get into entertainment. If you have drive and ambition and talent, you're going to make it. Does it make it a lot easier? Yeah, because you build a network. If you weren't born into the industry, and I wasn't, there's no one in my family who could walk me in. So if you weren't born into it, you need a network to get you your opportunities. And so school, not only do you learn a lot about the process, you meet so many people who are going to be your network that will be your future jobs. When I was in school, my professors would say all the time, stop trying to network with us, network with each other, because those are the people who will hire you. So like that's a hard lesson to learn, but that's the way it is. So
You think
I say go to
networks?
school if you can, if you have the opportunity and you can afford to do it. And I know it's expensive. I went to undergraduate for theater at NYU, and I wanted to be an actor. And so I started off studying acting as a teenager. I grew up in New York City, and I went to the Neighborhood Playhouse, and I went to Herbert Burghoff Studio, which is these are famous places where so many people from the 50s and 60s that were very famous went through. And I am older. I'm in my mid 50s, so I'm talking about I was in a teenager in the 1980s. And so I did those acting courses, and I went to NYU and studied at Playwrights Horizons, and I ended up also studying dramaturgy and some directing, and it's really helped me because ultimately I didn't become an actor. It was really tough to do that as a young person in New York City. It was really frightening, and I ended up in set design. So I went to undergraduate for it, for theater, had my acting meltdown, and then I went to NYU for my graduate degree. There's a 3-year program in set design, and which was all about ballet and opera, when I was there. And I kind of had to push my way into designing for film and TV. But I met the people I ended up working with. That's how I got going. And I've never have had the career I have today without school.
Makes sense. I get it. Do you think networking is important then? Do you think that's what our industry is based on, is just getting to know people, bonding with people, and understanding what they do?
It's all about networking.
It is literally all about networking.
It's all about networking, and like you have to have luck. Like if you do the hard work and you're dedicated and you're a kind person and you're honest and you show up and you're on time, you do all of those things. That's the prerequisite. But in order to get the opportunities, you have to be out there. And it's something hard to force yourself to do, because we're all we're all shy. Like most of us are shy, and you just if you have to put yourself out there, and that means going to parties or showing up at a networking events. Or I'm in a union in the United States. We have unions that are really, really strong. You have to be in one to work in the major film and TV industry. So get involved that I go to union meetings. I'm an organizer in my union, and I've just met people, and sometimes that just means reaching out to people who are working and talking to them. And I find that everyone wants to help, so don't be afraid.
I completely agree with you.
How have you networked?
My first ever job, I was working on Bond, No Time to Die, and a film called Argylle. And to get on those, I had to send emails every single day before I even got the opportunity to work on them. So every day I would send about 5 to 6 emails, maybe 7 emails, keep going, and then onwards and onwards. And then it just got to me by accident. And then since then, I've just been networking through LinkedIn. Just getting to know people from different states, from the UK to America. And it's just been, I think it's the easiest way to find work because you kind of present yourself in your first message. You know what I'm saying? So, for example, if you're reaching out to somebody and asking for advice, make sure you're very clear to what you're saying. If you're only asking for advice, make it very clear that that's what you're asking for. And then from there, you build a bond.
I call it an informational interview. That's how I got started. You get one, you reach out and say, look, I admire your work, and I'm just getting started, and I would love to show you what I'm doing, but I know that this is not a job interview, but I would love to have your guidance and some help.
Yeah, of course.
People love that, and they'll help you. And then at the end of the interview, you say, thank you. Is there anyone else you think I should reach out to? And get a couple of names. Because then you
That's
can
it.
use their name. That's how I did it. I used their name to get the next interview. But it's just putting yourself out there. I got into designing film and television because I took one set design class when I was a Playwrights Horizons, and I was out there being an actor, not being successful at all. And just one day, that teacher, who was my set design teacher, who was a really big famous Broadway costume designer, just called me up and said, would you like to be my assistant? I have a new show. And it's like something completely out of the blue. And I said yes. And then I did four shows with that guy. And he really taught me so much about the business and how it works and how to talk to actors and how to deal with other designers. And from there I met this amazing set designer who just opened up the world to me. And then when I got to grad school, it was just my friend who was going to go off. It's a 3-year program, and in the summer of my first year, he wanted to go do summer stock design a play. But he didn't want to give up his job. He was working for these television designers. So, will you hold my job for the summer? Will you go and do that? And I was like, sure, I'll do that. And these were these great guys, and they were just like really, they were working for public television and doing news, and they're doing these small projects, and they were just getting bigger and bigger. I got them lunch. I cleaned their office. I did Xeroxing. But in exchange, the people there taught me how to draft and how to draw and how to do presentations. And at the end of the summer, my friend Andre said, okay, it's time for you to give me my job back. They loved both of us, and they kept both of us, right? So then the two of us were working for the next 2 years while we were in grad school. And then when I graduated, they turned to me and said, we like you. Can you stay? Now you can work full time, and we'll make you an art director in our company. And by the way, there's this new news channel starting, and you can be the art director of it. And I was like, that's amazing. Yeah. And it's called MSNBC, which is a really major news channel now, but it was like something that we got to start. And so I just did that. And I just met more people. And then I started doing independent, like non-union indie films, and I met more people. And that's actually, I designed a few, and then I art directed for this guy who was a decorator out west, came from California and did all this stuff in the west, and he didn't really know very many people, but he was designing a non-union picture, and I seemed to have a lot of experience, and so I became his art director. And then from there, I got into the union. He got
Yeah. Yeah.
into the New York Union. It's called United Scenic Artists, Local 829. They represent all the set designer, costume designers, lighting designers in New York in film, TV, and live performance. So we were both in 829, and you got a pilot. And it was called Rescue Me, which starred Dennis Leary. And it was this show about New York City firefighters right after 9/11 and their lives after 9/11, like what the emotional fallout of all that was. We did this pilot, and then I don't know, went off, did something else, and then the pilot got picked up. And then I was doing a big like national television show as the art director, and suddenly I had no idea what I was doing. I was just making it up as I went along. But suddenly I was an art director, and everyone is like, "Oh, you are a big New York art director." And I said, "Yes." And it just one show led to the next show, and that's just how it all happens.
As I mentioned about LinkedIn, I get loads of messages coming in saying, I've never worked in an industry before, but I obviously want to get into props. I want to get into costume, but I have no experience. And I always say to them, you don't need experience. We're all here to learn. We're all learning every day. Every day is a learning day. You don't need to know everything. But what I would expect is probably confidence, passion, communication. What kind of skills do you look for when people reach out to you looking for work?
Well, if they're not, if they have no training and they're not in the union, I say be a production assistant, be a PA. It's what I did without the title when I got started. I just did anything I could to get into the office. And you learn so much about the business. So be a props PA, be a costume department PA, be an art department PA. I mean, it helps if you have some background on your CV, your resume in the area you want to get into. If you've been, if you want to be in the props department, just like saying, "Well, I'm handy. I've done construction work. I look, here are all the puppets I've built, or here are these cool things that I've done." And people love it because it's how they got started. So that's how you do that. You just keep reaching out and asking. I don't know, and hopefully, if that doesn't work, maybe your parents know somebody who will like get you in.
It's pretty much how it goes. I mean, it is luck. Half the time, people do ask me how I got in, and I would say it was pure luck. The right email at the right time. It was out of the blue, and it was a great chance. Would you say it's more luck, or would you say it's more family business driven, knowing somebody?
Well, look, if you're in New York, we have a mechanics local is what it's called. And they represent everyone behind the scenes that aren't the art director. So Local 52 started in, I don't know, in 1920. And it's the same families are still like involved in it. And people are grandsons and nephews, and like they just sort of, they're kind of walked in, but that doesn't mean that you can't get in. It's a tough union to get into, but they've been pretty open about bringing new people in. There's that. I mean, a funny story is you can't just you can't talk shit about people because you're gonna get into trouble. Like if I'm mad at someone at work and I'm like and I go and like I say to the set dresser, "I just can't believe this other person is like really effed everything up so much." They'll be like, "Oh yeah, they're my husband, right? Or that's my cousin, right?" So you kind of can't talk about you can't be mean to people because it's like there is a whole network in New York and LA of just people who've been doing this for generations, but you can get in. You can be that person.
Talk to me about Only Murders in the Building and how that went down for you. How you got the gig, what was it like working on it, etc.
That was an amazing show, and it has given me my two Emmy Awards that I'd gotten to the point in my career where I just never expected that I would never win anything, and I can't believe it. So it was a gorgeous opportunity. Kurt Beach is the production designer, and Kurt Beach, I met him. We did a small show. It was for Amazon. It wasn't so small, but an Amazon show called Dangerous Book for Boys, and that's how we met. And we really hit it off. And I really like working with production designers who are collaborative. work with some people who don't want my opinion,
Yeah.
and just want me to be a budget machine and a scheduler and keep my opinions to myself. They'll figure it all out, and I don't like it. And it's when I interview with a production designer, I'm also interviewing them. And anyway, Kurt is really collaborative. Kurt and I did that, and Rich Murray, who's the decorator from Only Murders, he was also on that show. So we had this collaborative team already who had done a show. And that was the first show after COVID, which made it super difficult. So we had all stopped working for many, many months, and that show came up. And Kurt called me and said, it was September. We're all starting to go back to work, and there was no vaccine yet. So, like, the vaccine hadn't come out until January or February, and this was September. So, we went back to this terrifying situation where we were all in masks, and we had to wear visors if we were going to be in a meeting. And they had these COVID teams who were like constantly watching us and telling us to stand 6 feet apart, and we're cleaning like all the surfaces. Someone would like dip into my office every 20 minutes to clean the light switch. It was really horribly frightening. Like, and but out of this like really intense, like re it felt life-threatening situation, there was this beautiful comedy, and it was about the place I grew up. I grew up in New York City. I'm from the Upper West Side. The show takes place on the Upper West Side. My father is an architect, or he was, he's passed away. My father is an architect. I grew up in architecture. He's a one of the early preservationists in New York, and is responsible for many of these major preservation projects that started. New York City was being torn down through the 50s and 60s, and there's just a group of people who decided to say stop. And my dad was on the community board, which was a political organization that, for the first time, the city started listening to community input about what it did. And he was in that first board, and he was instrumental in being part of the historic preservation movement. And I knew the owners and the families of a lot of these old buildings in my neighborhood. I'd been in and out of them. I played in them. I went to these schools. I knew people. I was as an adult, I had many dates there and gone in and out of many apartments. And I knew this neighborhood. So when Kurt said there's this thing, and it's about this building, and stars Steve Martin, and Selena Gomez and Martin Short, we despite the like horrible situation, we had fun. Kurt and I laugh. Like, if we're not laughing, we're not having it, the show isn't right. And so, despite everything that was going on, Steve Martin came, and he came to the art department, and he talked about what we were doing. And we had this opportunity to build everything because we had these two older actors, right? You know how old they are. And Selena Gomez actually has a immune deficiency disorder. And so we couldn't go out into the world, right? We had these three people who really needed to be protected. And it turns out no one would let us into their buildings because they were terrified of
Of course,
300
yeah.
crew members coming in who they don't know. And so everything that you see in that show, other than like the restaurant, every interior is done on a stage. It's a set. So we created this world. We had three stages. We built every apartment, every hallway. We thought about who these characters were. We had a backstory for them. We knew who Steve was. We knew who Selena was. We knew who like all these people were. And we built all of it. Quite often you get to build one or two sets, and then the rest of it, the producers make you find something out in location land that tries to match it, and it doesn't. But you got to build it all. So it had tremendous control, people recognized it. It was really beautiful. And it was kind of a love letter to my life and my father.
Which is lovely. I'm glad you said that, 'cause it's nice to have that kind of connection with your dad then, with the buildings of New York and the structure and the architects, which is quite nice to hear from your mouth, to be fair.
Yeah. And the people were all reflected in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if I could offer you a job today, if I could offer you a film or TV set in the UK, you can come over to London, and if I can offer you anything, what would you want to, what would you want to do?
Oh my God, I mean, I was the biggest Star Trek fan growing up, right? Like I'm an original Trek. But you know, but quite honestly now I've not grown up in the, like, we all want to do science fiction, right? But I haven't actually grown up doing it. I've done practically no science fiction. So I don't know. I am a drama person. I like a story about people who are having a moment in their lives and that the scenery says something about it. I love creating worlds. The scenery is another character. The actors, they you know they you think that they're bringing the life to the show, but we've so many times actors have said to us, I thought I knew who my character was, but until I arrived here this first day on the set, now I really understand who I am, right? So we like create these characters. It's not just the it's the choice of apartment or world that they live in, and it's the decor that they have and the props that they use and the clothes that they're wearing creates, it's a real collaborative world. So if I don't know if I could do anything in the UK, it would be of course something big where I have a huge art department, and it I get to do something period maybe, or I would
Oh,
say I'm going
nice.
to do something period that is in multiple periods, so it's contemporary and it's period, and I can use my classical acting training to which I know so much about, and I have four teams in six locations and an art department of 35. That's what I want. Fire me.
That'd be perfect. So explain to me the tough times, obviously, the industry. The industry is kind of hard right now due to the effects of COVID and the writers, actors strike. So explain how that's been impacted your career.
Well, I've been one of the very lucky ones, and I've been working. But not everyone is. So we all know, if you're in this business, you know about COVID and what that did. And we came back from COVID, and there was so much work. There was just like so much. Everyone was so hungry to have more, and so just the business exploded, and we just didn't have enough people. There was just pulling more people in. And then came the threat of the strike, and I started to throttle it back because no producer, like, they weren't really sure when the strike was going to start, and they just, no production company wanted to be in the middle of a show and have and be shut down. So things started to slow down. And then the writers went on strike. And I lived actually through the last writer strike. I was on Law and Order Criminal Intent, and we had all our scripts, and our producers were our writers. And then no one told anyone in New York to stop working. LA shut down, and New York just kept working. So I was very lucky on that one, and I was hoping it would be the same, but it wasn't. There was, if you were on a film and you had a script, you kept going. And if you were on a TV show, you could go until you were kind of done. But the things just started to slowly just shut down. Then the directors didn't strike. They settled. But when the actors went out, that was it. So it was like four shows that were still going, and then the actors went out, and then that was the end. And we didn't have the support. That in COVID, there was a lot of government support. They doubled unemployment, and the unions allowed us to like touch our retirement funds. And but in the, we were, it was like a whole second pandemic, but without the funding. And a lot of us have just spent all of our savings in the pandemic, and we had not much left. So since we've come back, it's been practically nothing. It's been really brutal. In LA, they were like up to 60% unemployment. And in New York, it was like, it's been like, it was like 40 to 50, and it's gotten better. Atlanta has been devastated, but there isn't much work, and the work is just, they keep promising us next quarter, after New Year's, after the next holiday, and it's really not come back. I have to say that for all the people who were brought in, a lot of people are having to make some hard choices about, do they wait this out? What can they do? If you're in construction, you can work in houses, right? If you're in props, can you, what can you do, right? And so people are falling away, and they may just might be the right thing to do. I hate to say it. There's been a pullback for the work has come back. I'd say there's been about six shows have started in New York City area, New Jersey, New York, which has some of the best tax credits in the country, which is unfortunately what draws production. And so there's been about six shows that have started or about to start. That's not a lot for New York. We're used to having 60 shows at once. Are there 30 shows right now? Maybe. It's getting started, but it's bleak. And because of our, I think it's because of healthcare. It's our unions in the United States provide us our healthcare and our retirement, which means that the producers have to pay on top of the daily wage, they pay an extra 35, 40% of wage towards our healthcare and our retirement, which in any other country in the world is part of your what you get as a citizen, and your government pays for it. We don't have national healthcare. And so the jobs are, I think they've made a, there's been this pullback. There's 25% less production coming out of Hollywood right now, the producers, all the studios. And of that, they're sending maybe 10, 20% of it more to Canada, to the UK, and to Eastern Europe. So there is this like 40% less work in the States, and it's because it's cheaper. Canada has unions, but they don't have to pay the healthcare and the retirement costs, so it's much cheaper. UK, you have guilds, but not unions. And in Eastern Europe, there's nothing. You can work 6 day weeks, and people negotiate their rates. And they used to bring us over to the to Eastern Europe. And I know a really huge production designer that was going to do something like the Alien series, and they worked it all out, and it was going to be in Canada. And then they didn't like the budget, and they brought it to Eastern Europe, and they just said, "Nah, you can't come. We don't want you and your union. If you were local, if you were already living in Eastern Europe, we would hire you." So I don't know. The world is really changing, you have to be. I think we're all going to have to be adaptable. I mean, to that end, I've started a software business. The pandemic happened, and I thought, what am I going to do with myself? And I thought, I've got this 25-year plus career. I know a lot about making TV shows and making films. So I just started this software company, it's about breaking down scripts. So you upload a script, and you it automatically re-renders the PDF on a screen, you can break it all down and share it, and it's collaborative with all the departments, and they can share drawings. But I'm putting myself into that because I don't know that there's going to be a career for me in 10 years. And so that's what I'm doing, right? So I've got a foot in two worlds, the software world, Synergy, and also in A29, in being an art director.
No, I completely agree.
What's it like in the
Completely agree.
UK
But
right now?
the UK is sort of dead. Yeah, very, very slow. It's kind of died, really. I'll be honest with you. Since the actors' strike and the writers' strike, it kind of everything shut down. Like every American production shut down. So Deadpool, Conjuring. I can't think of anything else was happening at the time, but everything shut down. It all came back, and everyone had to adapt to the UK productions, which is not a problem. It's all like Doctor Who, our soaps, stuff like that.
I'm a
We've
Doctor
all,
Who
yeah.
fan.
Are
I didn't
you?
tell you.
Are
I'm a
you?
huge Doctor Who fan.
I worked on Doctor Who, so we could talk about that. I'm more than happy to talk about Doctor Who. I worked on Doctor Who. Everyone had to adapt going back to the UK productions, which was not a lot because all the work came over from the States. So everything kind of shut down for us as well until it started back up, but then it started up slowly. So we didn't get work. I think they came back November, December time, and then work didn't pick up until March, April the following year. So it had a massive impact on us as well.
Yeah. I mean, globally. I mean, the actors, if you have one American actor in it, you're done, right? Because they can't work. And a lot of people, even if they're British actors, are in both unions, and they don't want to didn't want to mess with that. Because if you were in equity, British equity and American equity, you didn't work, because you didn't want to be blackballed. So I'm sorry to hear that. But I'm glad, things are getting better. And I know, there's some large, I've heard. I get to see, like, the agents get these breakdowns of all the shows that there are gearing up that have been greenlit, and they give them to production designers, and then I get to see them through that, and I see a lot of the shows that are gearing up, and there are some big ones coming to the UK. Of course, the usual science fiction,
Come as well.
marvely things.
Of course. Do you want to just quickly explain your app or your software to us again, just out of curiosity, how it works and why you've built it?
Yeah, so Synergy, which is spelled Cinergy dot app, APP. Synergy helps creative teams. So with the software, you, as I was saying before, you upload the script. We've worked with so many different departments, and we're super focused with the props department first. It's kind of been this really incredible journey to take the creative mind and be able to systemize it into software. What we do is so, like, everyone works a slightly different way, and they cobble together all these different bits of software to make it fit the way they think. And everything moves so quickly that we are just have to be adaptable. And it's been a really interesting process. We have two designers who are UI designers who I've been working with, and they interview me, and we've been designing these screens, and then we show them to a prop master, and we show them to decorators, and we show them to assistant directors, and the second ADs, and we just get their feedback, and we just keep reiterating and iterating. And I've been using the software at work, and I've just been realizing, oh, you forgot this, right? Or this doesn't work for this situation. So we've been able to develop, like, when you upload a script, you highlight a word, a drawer opens up, and we have all the right fields that for each department. So we have, like, over 20 departments in there, and we've talked to them about what the information they need to track is, that so they can just start entering. And I always think, like, as long as you just do everything that the software asks you to do, you're gonna, like, 80% of your job is gonna be done, and you just have to communicate it after that. You can break down your department work, and we have these special breakdown pages. You can add photos to it, and then add your drawings, and then it works with your crew. So if you're a prop master, you do your prop lists, you do your research, you can have a Zoom meeting with a director and show them all of the right photos, and then you can choose the director's select, and that will curate the photos, and now your crew knows just what the right research is, or the right object that you're buying is. And then from the set side, we have a phone app, and you can do all your continuity. And one of the things I hear all the time now from, we've been talking to prop people and on-set people and decorators, is that they take pictures and then they don't know, like, how to share them, right? Because it's all in their photo stream, and they don't want to share their photo stream because they've got their personal pictures in it, or that they're attached. There's a company here called Entertainment Partners, and they have an app, but so they have this app that you can track things with, but it's also their payroll company, so all your financial information is connected to it. So people are like, they don't want to share it. And so they create these drop boxes, which they have to, like, put the photos in on their weekend time or after work. And it's just a lot of work. So we built this app for them. So the moment you open it up, you can assign a set, a prop, a character to it, and it just automatically
Oh,
tags it. So
amazing.
you're working in this context, and you can take photo, 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 and all those photos are tagged, and you don't have to upload anything. You don't have to go to your phone and share it. You don't have to text it to people. And if you're looking for something, you can find it. So that's the idea. It's funny. A breakdown app is actually a communication app.
It's nice.
just to get everybody talking together and break down the walls between departments. So I'm very excited about it.
Are you hoping for it to go worldwide? Is it going to be in the US and the UK and
Worldwide.
everywhere? Worldwide, yeah. It would be very helpful.
You know, that's where the industry is, right? It's software as a service, right? It's completely simple. If you put up your sign on the internet, anyone can buy it. We use Stripe. I'm actually a European citizen, so I think I'm going to have to pay taxes everywhere. But we can yeah. I've worked in with folks from the UK, and I've worked in Australia on the leftovers, and I've worked all over the States. There are subtle differences, but frankly, we all do the same thing, and it's the same process over and over and over again. We just do the same thing over and over and over again in the same order. It's a different world we're creating. It's just different creative choices. So I know I'm going to have to go global.
Of course.
So this is my way of doing
That
it.
makes sense.
And
Makes sense.
I love helping people. That's what I do. I've been a I do this, but I also run a Google group in the city for all the art directors and production designers and set designers. We trade information. I've been in the an officer of my union, so I can help people and give back to my community. And it's the same thing from what that my set design teacher, my first professor, who like got me started because he helped me. It's all about helping. It's about a community. It's about helping each other.
Of course, passing on the knowledge and helping each other. That's the reason why I did the podcast. The podcast is to help people want to get into the industry, and they might not understand what an art director does to what a prop master does. Our universities don't always teach us. They teach us five things in universities, and I'm only speaking for the UK ones. They teach us director, producer, camera, lighting, sound, and editor. So six roles, sorry. They teach you six things, but they don't teach you about props. They don't teach you about what an art director does, a costume does. They don't teach you what greens do. So my job is to, well, it's not my job, but my passion is to explore the different departments in the film and TV industry and help people understand and why they might want to get into that one and not always want to, because everyone's goal is the same when you leave university. I'm going to become a producer. That's grand, but how are you going to get there? Because it's not just, you don't just start as a producer. You actually have to start from the bottom and make your way up. So that's the reason why I did the podcast.
No, and it's important. You may think you want to do one thing, and until you're exposed to it, you don't really know. So I always tell people, have an open mind, come and work on this. And my PA on my last two shows, he's a writer. He was working in the art department, but that's how we, I introduced him to the script supervisor and our head writer on the show, and she's like going to start shepherding his career. Like, it's amazing that you can meet people
Of
that
course.
way.
Absolutely. I completely agree.
Schools are great because they get you thinking and you get exposed to new ideas, and work is great that way. I do know, like, there are set design programs in London. I have a decorator friend who went to, I don't know if it was Guildhall or where she went, but there are programs that teach set design for film and TV in London.
I see. What my reference was just to basic university film and TV courses. They only teach you the basics of how to do certain things in the industry. More of a theory based than a practical base, if you would. But there are set schools out there. There's the Met's Film School in London that obviously focus on film itself and how you get in and et cetera, et cetera. So there are places out there that will teach you what you want to be taught. But I think what's nice about the podcast is that we can bring people in that actually have experiences and understand how they got from A to B and C and D and onwards.
Yeah, I've listened to it. I've been hearing it. Actually, before I came here, I listened to all your the
Did you
episode.
actually listen to did you actually listen to all episodes? Oh,
I did.
that means a lot. Thank you so much.
Of course. The really good thing is you haven't asked me to swear, and that's a really good thing because I'm not supposed
We're
to.
we are getting there. We're about to that's the that's the next I'm so glad you mentioned it, because it was the next thing I was going to mention. So welcome to the podcast. As I mentioned, this is a carry-on swearing podcast. That means it's swearing involved, but you don't have to if you don't want to. But I'm going to ask you the one question. Do you swear? How often do you swear? And do you swear on set? Please hit me.
Do I swear at home? I swear like a sailor. Things have changed. The world. So it's fun. I still feel like I'm 16 years old and do this, but I guess you just keep doing one thing after another, and then you find yourself where you are. So I've seen the world over some time, and I've seen it develop, and the kind of crazy fun carnival atmosphere that cable and TV and film used to be has been maturing and maturing and maturing. And yes, it's been corporatized, but so while we all used to swear a lot and kind of it was important to do it, we don't do that anymore on set. It is not okay to swear on set, right? It is not okay to be in an office environment and swear. Now, I know in the construction shop, a lot happens when I walk out of the door, and like I don't know, I'm a department head, right? People are, zip up and behave a little bit differently when I'm around, which I'm sorry that they do. I don't want that. But I think that it's really, since Me Too, there's been a huge cultural shift. And people used to tell a lot of off-color stories and make a lot of good jokes and swear. And we've come to realize that when you open the door to a permissive atmosphere, you don't know where it's going to go. And it's not fair to people. There are people, like you and I may like to kid about something, but to the other person in the room that has to listen to it, it's not what they want, and it creates an uncomfortable environment. And it's just not right. People should be able to come and create and feel free, and not feel like they're getting bullied for being a woman, for being gay, for being a person of color, or anything, or being straight, or whatever it is. It's just people should feel really free. And I think as much as it was so much more fun to be swearing and kind of crazy, it wasn't right. I could tell you the stories of women art directors like trying to like tell carpenters what to do and not being respected. And I'm gay, and like me going into the construction shop, the guys wanted to show me how much they like accepted me for it. And so they started telling me a lot of gay jokes and a lot of gay stories, or he's hot, or blah 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 blah. And I'm like, this isn't okay either. Like, it just so I don't know. We've grown up. We're really grown up. So I don't curse. Occasionally I have a code word curse that I don't know if I'm even gonna say it. But if my computer crashes and I've lost work, I've been working on a budget and I've lost it, you will hear from down the hall my nephew came up to me. He was 3 years old at the time, and he was staying with me during COVID, and he looked up at me and I was doing the dishes, and he said, I said, what? And he was like, fuck. And I was like, I don't understand you. He said it again. And I said, I think the word you're trying to say is truck. And he looked really confused. It's like, huh? It's like, I say it, truck. The word is truck. And he's like, no, it's not. And he walked away. He was kind of disappointed. So that is my code word. If you find me really, really angry, I may have a big scream of mother trucker, but that's it.
Fair enough. I think the culture is very different between British and US because, as you've heard from my podcast, as you mentioned, I had a couple of guests on my first ever episode, and we've all worked together in the same departments from costume to props. And we were discussing about actually that swearing in maybe not on set, but like you said, in the warehouses or in the. There's a lot of swearing and continuous swearing. And I never heard my prop master swear. I've never heard the costume HOD swear, but everyone underneath, there's a lot of swearing going on.
And I don't know. I was about to say, and that's fine, because maybe, I just gave you a lot of reasons why it may be not be fine.
No, but of course, no, it makes sense. I don't swear my. I do swear. That's a lie. I do swear myself, but not as often as I let off to be.
It's fun, but I don't know. No one wants to feel edited.
I do have a question actually, it's just popped in my head. In I'd say the States, but actually overall, there are two films that got canned after production, which was Batwoman and Acme versus Coyote for tax off reasons. What is your opinion on that? After all the hard work was done from the everyone on set, what's your opinion on that?
During the pandemic and the writer's strike, the studios were still collecting their $16, their $20 a month fees from all the subscribers, and they had no expenses. And part of why we're what's going on right now is there's so much consolidation, and like HBO, like it's just all these people got fired and quit when Discovery bought them. And just and Discovery like. Discovery bought HBO, Warner, Max and everything, and they saddled them with $1 billion of debt, right? So now there's all of this debt, and so they have to pay it off. And they were at no incentive to settle the strike because they were every quarter had all of this money, and there's set, and so then they just wrote off these properties. There were just more money that they wrote off, and so that's just it has to do with consolidation of the industry. I just that I don't love. I also don't love tax breaks, right? In the end, if I could say there should be, my opinion is there should be no film tax incentives at all. Producers don't need them. Hollywood should just pay for the films that they want to make, except that there are tax incentives is the problem, right? Oil companies get lots of money. And they for their tax incentives. American businesses get lots of money. UK businesses get lots of money. And we're a business. It's not show fun, it's show business. So that's just the world of it is. So it's this race to the bottom, give more and more away. And we all want to work. And so we all like go and we advocate for more tax incentives and to give away more and more. But we're just fighting each other. And now in the United States, we're seeing the result because we thought that the work would never get offshored. And now it is. Sorry, I'm a
I mean,
downer.
that's fine. It's all good. No, it's good. These are what the questions is because people don't quite understand what how it affects people and why things are happening. Like the whole debate about Warner Brothers should release Acme versus Coyote or what the film was called. No one understands the business side to it. They only the entertainment side. So it's nice to hear someone else's perspective on it.
I wish I knew more, but that's what I talk to accountants, I talk to producers, and this is what I'm hearing. It's a business, and it's a shame that people's creative work doesn't get seen. But that's the way it goes. I get a lot of pressure. They're constantly trying to tell me I need to have use fewer people, and does this. So the, like there are people who are daily and there are people who are weekly, and so I'm like, do you really need to have these dailies? And I'm like, these people are going to be on the whole time, and you want me to get rid of them for 1 week and then bring them back for the next 3 months? Like, is that really fair? Like,
Yeah,
but
of
people
course.
don't think about the rent that has to be paid,
No,
and
of course.
it's really hard. It's sometimes it's really really hard because they're pushing for less and less. And they say they have no money, but
They always have
they
money.
have
They
there's a
always
lot
have
of
money.
money.
There's always
There's
money,
always more
or not.
money, but don't let them know that I know.
We are coming to the near the end of this podcast. I was just
No.
wondering, I know. Could you give any advice to people that are trying to get into the art department or just trying to get into film in general? What advice would you give them?
Do it. If you want to do it, right? Like if you don't, you have to try. So do it, try. If you don't like it, then don't do it. Be a lawyer.
Be a lawyer.
Put yourself out there. Be kind. Be honest. Be show up. Network. Talk to people. Be creative. Let your hair hang down. Have fun. If it's not fun, it's not worth doing. And that's why we do this. There are more profitable, more stable careers. But just do it. If you want to get started, really trust that instinct. And you'll know if it's time to stop or that there's something, if you're not really interested in it, you will figure that out. But live with no regrets. That's the way I've lived my life. I have no regrets. I just make the decision that I want in the moment. And as long as it's kind and it's true, and I am honest with people, then that's good.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much, John. I'm so glad you came on, buddy. I really appreciate it. I look
Yeah.
forward to seeing more of your work. How can people find your software, by the way, if when it's ready? How can people get that?
It's there's this thing called the internet, and you go on
Of
www.synergy.app, and it's CINERGY.
course, yes, nice.
Cinema synergy.app. Or you can, so you can, go directly there. You can find me on LinkedIn. You can find me around on the internet. You can ask for Jordan Jacobs. You can email me directly. There you have it.
Perfect. Thank you so much, buddy. I really appreciate you coming on.
And thanks for doing this podcast. I love it.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.